what fourth round draft money is nowadays, I don't know. When I scouted for the California Angels, fourth round draft money in 1968 and 69 might have been $15,000, $10,000. I don't know.
I was going to ask you, too. I kind of skipped by it. What do you remember about the rivalry on those days when you played for the Giants with the Dodgers?
Oh, outstanding. But it wasn't just in the big leagues, but it was the same thing throughout the whole minor league organization. I played in Sioux City, Iowa, and that was the Giant organization. And in the Western League, we had Pueblo, Colorado, which Elroy Face played for. And that was a great rivalry there. Then I went to the Marine Corps, came back out. I played in Minneapolis and St. Paul. St. Paul is the Dodger affiliate. And there was a great rivalry there. So you wound up really despising them all the way through. And then, of course, you got to the big leagues, and the Dodgers were such a very, very fine ball club that you wanted to beat people who were in front of you, and they were people who were in front of us most of the time.
Were they pretty cocky about it?
I don't think so. They were professional. I have a lot of respect. I can remember playing in Ebbets Field the first time I ever saw it, and Campanella and Newcomb and Jackie Robinson and Carl Ferrillo and Snyder and God, one right after another, and just, I thought, very professional people.
That's great. Did you ever get any fights? Did I ask you that?
No, not really. No. Yeah, there's some brawls from time to time, and everybody gets in those, but not.
You never
not
got thrown out of a game?
I did get thrown out of a game when I was with the St. Louis Cardinals my last year. It was the only time I ever got thrown out. And I was playing shortstop, and we were playing in Cincinnati, and somebody came down to steal second base, and I thought I made the tag, and Harry Windelstedt was the umpire, and I argued, and he said I bumped his chest, he threw me out. The interesting thing about it is our dugout was at first base, and I had never been thrown out. I didn't pay much attention to what happened, so I started to go to the dugout, and they threw me off the field, and then I got booed, and I said, geez, this is very strange. I don't know what to do.
So what did you do? You just went in the clubhouse?
Yeah, you go in the clubhouse. But I never paid any attention when somebody got thrown out of the game before. They got thrown out. Okay, let's go play the game. Where'd they go? I don't know. Now I know where they went. They went to the clubhouse.
So when you went to the Mets, you became the regular shortstop. You played
off and on.
33 games.
Off and on.
Who was the other guy?
Roy McMillan. And then shortly thereafter, at the end of the season, they brought in the shortstop who played there for them 7-8 years. Good shortstop.
Harrelson?
Yeah, Buddy. They brought in Buddy. He came in and joined us in about mid-September, and I think he probably played the last 5 or 6 games, something like that. But Buddy turned out to be an outstanding shortstop and a big asset for the New York Ball Club. I happened to see Buddy about, in fact, Buddy's just born and raised across the bay here. But I happened to see Buddy in New York at an old-timers game many years ago, and Buddy has become a very influential person in minor league baseball on the East Coast.
Oh, wow.
Nice man.
He's always remembered for the
fight with
Rose.
Yeah. Sure.
What was that team like? They weren't good yet, right?
No,
they won it all
no.
in 69,
no.
but they still were.
Well, in 1967, 66, I was with the club, and they had never been out of 10th place, and we wound up in 9th place, I believe, that year, and the fans thought it was absolutely fabulous. I can recall a ball game that we're playing against Pittsburgh, and Pittsburgh had a good ball club, and I think that we're down by 7 or 8 runs in the 9th inning, and we scored maybe 5, and you would have thought we just won the World Series. They were fabulous fans. My wife always says when she would go to the ballpark, she was a spectator in all the other ballparks except in Shea Stadium. There she was a participant.
And what else do you remember about that team? Who were some of the other guys?
Bob Shaw, Bob Friend, a fellow by the name of Rebont, a pitcher. Grainpool was at first. Hunt was at second. Boyer was at third. Swoboda. And who else did we have in the outfield? I don't remember. We had a center fielder who played very well that year, but I'm 71 now, and I forget a lot of things.
I interviewed a guy. I think he played before there. He's a catcher, Jesse Gonder.
Jesse Gonder played before that.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Yes, he did play before that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then I want to go back now, kind of jumping around, to Boston when you got you were in the All-Star game. I want to know about the All-Star game. How was that like?
It was a wonderful experience for me. Aparicio couldn't make it, so I went in his stead. And I didn't play, which has always irritated me, particularly after last year or the previous year when they ran out of players. The experience of that year just brought to mind the the pain that I had in that All-Star game, because he played Fregosi, that is the manager from, he was from the White Sox manager, and he played Fregosi the whole game. But I think, and he did that with several players. There were a lot of players who didn't get into that ball game at that particular time. But I think at that point, the American League had been beaten by the National League for something like 12 out of 14 times. And I think the manager decided that he was going to stay with his very best lineup and try to win the game. And I think that's fine. As a player who was voted in, it was disheartening not to have the opportunity to participate.
Now, where was it?
In Shea Stadium. Johnny Callison hit a home run against Dick Raddatz in the ninth inning or the tenth inning, I'm not quite sure, and they beat us, I don't know, 2-1 or 3-2, something like that.
And was that, did they have two All-Star games then, or that was just one?
There was only one then. The two came a little bit later.
And then, so you played one season with the Mets, and then you got traded to
St. Louis. I got traded April Fool's Day. It was a wonderful day. Wes Weston was manager. Called me in the office and said, Eddie, I traded you. And I says, who am I going to? And he says, St. Louis. I says, fabulous. And then, of course, we won the World Series.
For three guys. Buchek, Art Mahaffey, and Tony Martin.
I didn't realize the other two were
traded
involved.
By the New York Mets, the St. Louis Cardinals, for Jerry Buchek, Art Mahaffey, and Tony Martin.
I
never heard of those guys.
Well, Buchek, played a little bit of shortstop for the St. Louis Ball Club. Art Mahaffey was a very good pitcher for Philadelphia years before that. What was the third player's name?
Tony Martin.
I don't know that name.
It's cut.
Maybe he's a singer.
Yeah. He made it in another career. Another thing I wanted to talk about is on May 7th, 1960, another way that you get into the history of baseball is you hit the first inside the park home run.
That's true.
Park.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do. We were playing Pittsburgh, and a fellow by the name of Green is pitching for them. And I hit a ball, as I say earlier, that the left field wall was all the way back to the concrete. There was no fence at that point. And I hit a ball in the left center off of him, and I got a home run. The interesting note about that is that my father was in the stands, and he didn't see me play too many games on the road. He saw me in Los Angeles when we come on in, but that was a wonderful day for me.
What was your foot speed like?
I wasn't particularly quick.
Average?
Yeah, average.
And where did you bat? You were seventh?
Typically 7 and 8, yeah.
So you were behind, you were ahead of Haller and...
Well, Haller wasn't catching then.
Oh, who was the catcher?
Hobie Landreth.
Oh, that's right.
Hobie might have batted 8th, I might have batted 7th, I'm not quite sure which. But Hobie was the starting catcher at that point.
And then in 67 with the Cardinals, you got in the World Series, got to bat twice, didn't get
No, I didn't get to bat at all again.
Oh, no.
No, I played defensively 2 times.
Oh, that's right, you played in 2 games and no at-bats.
Yeah.
Errors, though, I hope.
No. Dal Maxwell was the regular shortstop, and they pinch hit for him in each of those games. We had, in fact, when you played shortstop behind Gibson, you didn't have any opportunities to make errors. He'd strike out 12, 13, 14 a game. In fact, I think in that series he must have struck out over 40 players in the 3 games.
Who did you room with there?
I was rooming with... started out with Mike Shannon, and then we went to second base, Julio Javier.
Mike Shannon's the announcer, and Julio Javier's kid plays, or did play.
Did play for a number of years,
right,
yeah.
He played for the Dodgers. I'm a Dodger fan.
Are you?
Are you?
Okay, well, I see the...
Well, I wore this. What I do is I try to wear a hat on whoever I'm interviewing, I didn't have any Mets.
Am I a Dodger fan? No, I'm not.
You're not? Oh, no. I figured living down there you might have been. Well, of course, with the Giants.
Well, there was the Dodgers weren't there when I was
exactly.
I was a boy.
That's right.
It was the Los Angeles Angels of the Pacific Coast League.
And they played in the old Wrigley
Field, 42nd in Vermont.
Yeah. Oh, you were talking about the money and everything. Did you ever get any endorsements?
No, players in my Oakton didn't get endorsements.
Didn't they give you, like, cigarettes and beer and stuff? I hear all these guys telling me they had, like, cases of Chesterfields given to them.
Well, first of all, I wouldn't take a smoke, but I don't ever recall seeing that. The only time I ever saw anything come in the clubhouse was in St. Louis when Augie Bush would make sure that we had Budweiser. But each player at the beginning of the year, at those years, I think 98% of the players got the same thing. We got $125 or a set of golf clubs from Hildreth and Bradsby, and that was about it. There was no money at that point. Players didn't get anything.
Didn't players smoke more? Weren't there more? I know DiMaggio smoked. They said.
Well,
do you remember who?
I don't know that the case? Obviously, something many of them smoked, but is it a greater percentage than it is now? I would hope that it was a greater percentage because the players should be smart enough to know what they're doing.
Right, they didn't make as big a bunch of health issues.
Yeah, I mean, I have a daughter who smokes, and it's hard for me to understand it. I was a teacher in college for 17 years, 24 years, as a matter of fact, and you see young people smoking, and then all of a sudden the information comes back to them about cancer and secondhand smoke and other problems. And you say, anybody with any smarts at all has got to say, you know, this isn't good for me. I've got to battle it any way I possibly can.
Yeah, my brother's 42 years old, great shape, never been in bad shape in his life. He had a heart attack. Mm-hmm. Total occlusion of the major artery to his heart. Mm-hmm. And he's in better, you know, he finally woke him up.
It's not a surprise.
It's basically cigarettes. Yeah. And then, so what do you remember about Bob Gibson?
Bob Gibson's probably in the top two or three competitors I ever saw in my life. Bob Gibson was a fabulous basketball player at Creighton University. He wound up playing for the Harlem Globetrotters. He was fierce on the mound, absolutely fierce on the mound. And if you dug in, he was going to knock you down. It was that simple. He had his side of the plate, and you had your side, and if you intruded into his, you were gone. I think Jim Ray Hart recognized that after maybe a second or third year in the big leagues, and he hit a home run off of Bob, and the next time he broke his collarbone, not his collarbone, but maybe it was a collarbone. Anyway, he would knock you down in an instant, but it was fair game at that point, as opposed to now you knock somebody down and everybody goes crazy.
So it must have been old home week kind of in the World Series because you had played for Boston
It was. And frankly, I must admit, I didn't think they had a chance against us.
Really?
They had a new ball club. They had half a dozen new players who were playing regularly for them, and I really wasn't that familiar with them. Then Yaz had hit 340 that year, 330, won the Triple Crown. Yaz had never performed prior to that when I was on the ball club. He was always a very good player, but not... all-star caliber at that point. And Jim Lonborg, who was with us when I was with the Red Sox, pitched brilliantly in the series. And had they had another pitcher of any real influence, they could have won the series.
And then, you mentioned Lonborg, but he broke his leg or something?
He broke his leg skiing. I think it was that. It was after that season or the next season. I'm not quite sure which. And then I think the Major League Baseball got into it a little bit and said, you know, we got to protect our athletes somehow or another, and I think they probably put some restrictions in various contracts. I'm not sure about that, but I would suspect they probably did.
A good example of that was Jeff Kent when he played for the Giants and the motorcycle. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and all
yeah.
That.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess you don't buy into the curse of the Bambino?
No, I don't. But it's amazing. I was really rooting for the Red Sox, and I thought they would win, particularly with Martinez pitching that last ball game. I didn't think the Yankees could possibly beat him. Unfortunately, I didn't happen to see the last inning when they scored to beat him. But I was rooting very, very strongly for him. In fact, I was rooting for two clubs. I wanted the Red Sox and the Cubs in there.
Now, what did you think when you read about it? You didn't watch it, but when you read about it later, do you think about Grady Little leaving him in and all the criticism that he took?
I don't know what the circumstances were surrounding that particular inning. Unless I could recreate it in my own mind, it would be silly for me to make any judgment.
What do you think's wrong with the A's? Why they can't get to that level? They do so well during the regular season.
Well, this year, of course, they lose Mulder, which is a big, big shock for them.
Mm-hmm. And Hudson that last game.
Yeah, Hudson, yeah. I don't know. I read the book Moneyball. Mm-hmm. They talk about the percentage of the on-base percentage is terribly important. The stolen base doesn't have any significance. And I watch the Marlins, and they run the bases, and it makes a heck of a lot of significance to me. I scouted for 2 years. I listened to, after having read the book, it seems to me that numbers people are directing that organization, and they don't take into account some of the other things that have been historically significant in baseball evaluations for 60, 70 years. So I'm not sure I can buy into it all. Totally. I think there's some application, certainly. It's kind of like the underhand pitcher they have. I can't remember what his name is.
Sparks? No. Oh, no, no. Bradford.
Bradford. Yeah. You know, he evidently was kept saying, no, they can't pitch, he can't pitch, he can't pitch, but he keeps getting everybody out. So you have to go along with what's effective.
I know. I guess Bean, they said he's got a lot of flack for that book. They said one of the things is he kind of made some of those other general managers look stupid in the book.
Absolutely.
And How are those guys going to deal with him now? Mm-hmm. I mean, what is he when he goes for trades? They're saying a lot of teams, they're too afraid they're going to get burnt. He's going to write another book,
and he's expounded in terms of his own acuity when he mm-hmm. says, I traded this guy for this guy, and it worked out wonderfully for me. Didn't I snooker him? Well, that's not a very good thing.
He was saying during the World Series that look at now, Giambi can't catch up to a major league fastball, but that has to do with his knee as well.
Also, he's 8 or 10 years removed too.
Right.
Of course, he must be 35 now.
Yeah, he's been around.
Yeah. So you do. So other than Bonds, there's not too many guys can catch up with that fastball that easily at particularly that age.
Yeah. I was going to ask you about a couple other guys from St. Louis. I'm looking at your library here, and you have Curt Flood the way it is. Mm-hmm. What did you think about him?
Outstanding human being. Very, very good fellow. Very hard worker. Played a great center field. When you think about Curt Flood, and I look at Willie Mays, Curt Flood caught everything he could get to, but Mays played so much shallower than Curt. Curt played extremely deep, but played very well. He was a great leadoff hitter, or second hitter, I guess. Brock hit first, and Flood hit second, but did whatever he needed to do to win the ball game, push a bunt, do a lot of different things. Good man.
Now, was there any of that could you foresee in any way that he, in the future, was going to challenge the free agency?
Was he
kind of a rebel? Or
no, he was not a rebel.
He was quiet, wasn't he?
Yes, he was very quiet. But the game changed. I mean, who could have predicted that Messerschmidt and McNally would challenge the reserve clause and wind up making, at that point, $250,000? In fact, McNally didn't even play that next year. And Messerschmidt, I think, got $250,000 or something like that. And the players said, oh, my God, $250,000. Where is it going to go from here? Is anybody ever going to make $500,000? And now we got to make it $25 million. I would have never expected that out of Curt or anybody else at that point, because you know they say, and I don't know if I want to say this or not, but I will. They always said that the players were slaves to the ownership, and when they controlled you for 6 years, three years in the minor leagues, 3 years in the major leagues, we were pretty much slaves to their dictates. So I think you were in the game, you signed a contract under those terms, and you assumed that was going to continue.
Now, did you ever get into any extended contract negotiations?
No, when I played, there was nobody had agents. There might have been one or two. I think that the first time I heard of agents was when Drysdale and Koufax got together and they were going to try to hold up the Dodgers, and I think they had an agent. And they wanted each of them wanted 125 or something like that. I think that's the first time I heard. In 1964. I think I was seventh in the American League in hitting that year, and was on the All-Star team, and I was very pleased with my year, and I had made $27,000 the previous year, and came contract time. I said, well, you know, I've got to get a boost, and they sent me the same contract, and I said, you know, gee, I thought I had a pretty good year, and they sent the same contract back again, and it was about 2 weeks before I finally agreed. It was certainly before spring training because we got our contracts the first week in, I think first week in December, if I'm not mistaken, or maybe January. But I didn't hold out. I was just trying to negotiate with him. I did negotiate a heck of a raise. I got a $1,000 raise.
Well, you figure if you get 27,000, seventh in hitting, get in the All-Star game, you should at least get 40.
Well, in today, if you do that, you go from 100,000 to 500,000. But then there was not much money in the game. I think I did a statistical analysis when I was at San Jose State. And in 1962, I think the average salary was $27,000. I think I saw a figure that in 1967, the average salary was $28,000. Now, you know, the average and the mean are a lot different from one another. But I'm not surprised it would be that figure.
Hmm. And what about Lou Brock? One of the guys I interviewed recently is Ernie Brolio, who's claimed to fame. He got traded for Lou Brock.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess Lou Brock kind of, didn't he, as far as offensively, carry you in 67 World Series?
Oh, he was fabulous.
He had a phenomenal
He was
World
fabulous,
Series.
Yeah. He did great all year long. Steal a base, run, played good, played a good left field, had more home runs than what you would have anticipated. Was always cheerful, ready to go. He was a great player.
And so what happened after 67? Why did you quit? Why'd you retire?
I was 36 years of age. I had prepared to go into teaching and coaching. I had prepared that for 14 years in a row. De Anza Community College was just opening up, Foothill Community College, which is our sister campus. I knew the people there. I had gone to see the president. I indicated to him that I was interested in the job. And knowing what happens in community colleges, jobs open up and then they close. And so I had to make the decision, was I going to try to hang around for another year, or was I going to take a job that I was going to be happy with and be right next to my own home? De Anza College was 2.5 miles from my house. I took a huge cut in salary. We went from $28,000 plus the little World Series money, which was little, $8,400 then. It's now $300,000. I took a cut from $41,000 to $9,200 my first year of teaching. And my wife said, how are we going to live? And I said, we're going to live off whatever little we've saved over a period of time. And that's what we did.
And did you teach classes too?
I was a physical educator. I taught activity classes. I was a baseball coach for 17 years, did both of those things. I was an acting dean for 13 years, and then I was the dean of physical education and athletics for the last 7 years there.
And who were the guys that went pro?
The most successful would be Danny Gladden. Mm-hmm. Danny played for 10 or 12 years, but I had Billy Pakoda, who played for the New York Mets and Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Leonard, who played for the Giants.
Mm-hmm.
Sandy Whittle, who played for Cleveland. I had nine that played in the big leagues, but Danny was the most successful of all of them.
Now, did you know Messerschmitt when he was coaching at Cabrillo, or that was after?
Yes, it was after I was coaching, but I was still at the ends of college, yes. Mm-hmm.
And did the players know that you were a former major leaguer? Did they ever want to talk to you about it?
Oh, sure, yeah. I think that's, you know, right away, who is your coach? What's he doing? What's his background? Sure, they know that without being asked.
Did you ever have any ideas that you might want to go coach in the minors or take a
pass? I did manage in the minors. I managed to... we finished up school in June, and I managed Idaho Falls, which was the California Angel for the franchise. the manager at Ogden was
not the guy who later coached the Phillies.
No. He managed the Dodgers for X number of years. Tommy Lasorda.
Oh yeah,
Lasorda was there, and he had a great ball club, and they beat us out by one game at the end of the year. He had.
That was when you had Say and all those guys.
And Garvey and Say and
Ferguson.
Lopes and Valentine and Pashorek. He had a great team, and they beat us by one game. I managed that year. Then the next year, I was coaching at De Anza again, and the manager at San Jose was going to get a different job. That was Tom Morgan. And so they asked me to manage San Jose DBs, and I managed them from about July through the end of the season, June through the end of the season.
I don't remember George Brett. Jim Bouton played for that team. That wasn't that.
Bouton did?
Yeah. Yeah.
George Brett did. I didn't
know. Yeah.
But that was when it was one of Kansas City.
Yeah.
I didn't know that Bouton ever
played. Yeah, in fact, in ball four, they show. I mean, maybe one, you know, other minors are.
Yeah.
He maybe played a couple months.
Mm-hmm.
What would you describe your coaching style as? Depends on your team, I guess.
I think my coaching style was one I wanted the kids to understand how to play the game. I used to talk a lot about footwork. Used to talk about Bill Rigney used to say something. I think he probably got it from Leo DeRocher. He talked about manufacturing runs, how you do that sort of thing. That's exactly the way the Marlins play the game. That's not the way the Oakland Athletics play the game, or even the Giants play the game. But I wanted the players to understand the efficiency of movement and how you can get the best out of what you've got.
Do you hit and run a lot?
We did hit and run. We tried to steal
bases.
One of the things that really made me feel good is I taught my players how to delay steal. And there's a young man who's still in the area here now. He works for a friend of mine. And every time I see him, he said, "Hey, Eddie, I can steal the base. I can delay steal." He had 8 delay steals during the course of the year. So you try to take advantage of what the other team can't do and make sure that your team can.
Now, on a delayed steal, you take off when? When the pitcher throws it?
No. As the ball crosses home plate is where you make your move. And what you try to do, Eddie Stanky taught it to me, you try to take 2 glide steps. And what's happening is the shortstop and say, what you're doing, you're stealing second base on the shortstop and second baseman. As the ball crosses home plate, they've got to direct their attention to the hitter. They can't see you, so you move then. And as soon as the ball is caught and not put into play, the infielders have a tendency to drop their head and then wait for the next play. Well, they drop their head, they can't see you, you've come off by that time maybe 30 feet, and you steal it. Now they recover and come back to second base.
It's too late by then.
Sure, the majority of the time. Yeah. But it's a risky play, and it's hard to execute.
Yeah. So later you scattered for the Angels. Did you scout anybody who went on and did well?
No. We had had some players that were high draft choices, but they never, one of them got the big leagues for.
It's hard to scout, isn't it? I mean, I think if you get one all-star in a whole scouting career, you're successful, right?
Possibly. The scouting system then was so different than it is now. The California Angels used to have 15 clubs. The Giants, when I joined, had 17 clubs. Now they have 5. So the selection process becomes much, much narrower. And you used to be able to say, do you want to play baseball? Okay, fine, we'll send you to Muskogee, Oklahoma. Well, now that Muskogee, Oklahoma franchise has only got one shortstop position, and I can't sign 15. Hopefully we get there, I have to sign one. So it's much more difficult to be drafted, but it's so simple to get the big leagues by comparison.
Right.
When I was in the minor leagues, I can recall the Dodger organization, Pee Wee Reese was the shortstop of the Dodgers, and they had Nandy Fernandez and Chico Pascal, and they must have had 5 or 6 very, very good shortstops who wound up getting the big leagues later on, but they were playing AAA, and you took a look at the player's conduct, the player's continuation through the system, and he'd play D-ball and he hit 330, and he'd play B-ball and he hit 330, and he'd play C-ball and maybe get to AA, and now we get AAA, and Pee-wee was still there, and well, you hit 330, but where are we going to put you? You have to go back to St. Paul again. So the players, years ago, would spend 6, 7, 8 years in the minor leagues. Bob Lennon didn't get to the big leagues until he was 28 years of age.
Maury Wills.
Sure.
10, 12 years or something.
Yeah. So, and that was not an uncommon thing. I think if any player got to the big leagues before 3 or 4 years, it was extraordinary.
Well, I remember somebody, Gus Triandos, I'm sure you remember him.
I know Gus.
Told me that the reason he thinks he made it to the majors was because there were so many minor league teams.
Without a doubt.
And that, he wouldn't have gotten a chance if he started
Absolutely.
In D and whatever.
Without a doubt. I played Class D ball my first year.
Yeah.
And people said, well, why did you make it and somebody else didn't? A lot has to do with luck. A lot has to do with timing. A lot has to do with who saw you at a given time and how persistent you were.
Well, maturity, too.
Maturity, too.
I mean, you
some guys come in, I came out at 5'10", now I'm 6'1.5". I weighed 155, came out of high school. I played at 190 at the end. Maturity, you grow a little bit, sure.
Yeah. Well, I can't think of anything else to ask you. If you had to sum it all up, in looking back, on your baseball career, coaching, scouting, playing, what would you say is the most valuable thing?
I think I've been extremely fortunate. I've done what I've wanted for 40 years. I worked for 41 years. My family says I didn't work, I played for 41 years. And that's true. It's true. I think I led a charmed life. I didn't make the money that the players make today. But at the same time, I walked away from the game with a World Series ring. I walked away from the game with a loving wife that I met when I was playing. She was an airline hostess. I live a comfortable life. I'm not well healed, but I live a comfortable life at this point.
Healthy looking.
I feel great.
In great shape.
I feel great. So I'm just very fortunate. The game provided me with an awful lot. Retrospectively, I think what I probably should have done is I should have gone to college for a couple of years and then came back out. Because that way I wouldn't have had to spend 14 years
going to
school.
Yeah, you went to college.
And that was hard. That was very hard.
I bet.
For instance, my nephew now. The baseball program has a college scholarship offer for him. Now, they'll provide X number of dollars for him to go to school for 8 semesters. Whether he's going to have the persistence or the tenacity to go to school for that period of time, I don't know. But if he does, it's going to be very, very hard.
Well, nowadays, more people go to college, right?
Sure.
Because they sign the high school phenoms every year, but still.
Moneyball, they don't want the high school
player. Right, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, it was funny in that Moneyball where they concentrate on that one catcher,
Brown.
Yeah.
Fact,
I don't even know how he's doing now.
They say he's doing quite well, but it's interesting. One of the scouts had indicated that they kept talking about his lower body and how his thighs flopped together, and I think it was Bean that made the comment that you know, we're not selling jeans, we're selling baseball talent. And Scott said, yes, but if the jeans were corduroy, he'd be on fire. And I thought it was a great line.
Combustion.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate it.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Great. You're quite
welcome.
Great interview.
Good.